The next case today is number 06-2080, the United States against Scott L. Gordon. Mr. Mandel. Or Madel, I'm sorry.
It's Madel.
Madel.
Madel. It's close enough, Your Honor. Thank you. And may it please the Court, we have identified two issues of error committed by the District Court, one relating to acceptance of responsibility, one relating to Booker. I'd like to address the acceptance of responsibility first and then briefly address Booker. With respect to acceptance of responsibility, we would ask that the Court consider two specific cases of the Seventh Circuit in order to vacate the District Court's sentencing and remand. The first is United States versus Bezerra, 1992 case in which the Court wrote that we think that the application note, and they're referring to the application note regarding acceptance of responsibility, is on the right track in emphasizing words over deeds, external, verifiable, expiatory acts over self-serving, unverifiable reports of interior mental states. And there they stated that deeds are better evidence than words, kind of common sense. Second case is United States versus Eshman, 2000 opinion, in which the defendant challenged his drug quantity. In that case, the district court refused to accept responsibility because the district court came to the conclusion that the defendant was not contrite. This court held, while we do not take lightly the district court's concerns about Eshman's contrition, the court's finding appears to have been colored by Eshman's firm but good faith challenge to the drug quantity calculation. I'd like to look at this case in light of Bezerra and Eshman. And first, I'd like to direct the court's attention to seven specific deeds that Mr. Gordon did prior to sentencing in order to demonstrate his acceptance of responsibility.
Before you do that, I would like to ask you this. If Mr. Gordon had pled guilty to embezzling under $120,000, what would the sentencing range have been?
If on the score, it's difficult because we're also appealing they gave us 2 points for a breach of trust and as well as the refusing to give us the acceptance. So it would have been, I believe it would have been two sentencing levels lower if it would have been below 120. And Mr. Elke can correct me if I'm wrong, Your Honor. Those seven deeds. Number one. FBI shows up in April 2004, two FBI agents at Mr. Gordon's house. He immediately accepts responsibility. He writes out a statement, gives it to the FBI. Two, within that same month, I write a letter to the FBI and say, Mr. Gordon wants to accept responsibility. Can you please give me the name of the AUSA? Three, we get the first loss amount from the government at $117,000. Mr. Gordon takes out a line of credit in order to pay that amount, but we're told to hold off until that restitution amount is firm. Four, April of 2005, Mr. Gordon enters into a settlement with the Office of Thrift Supervision before any charges are brought and agrees to be permanently banned from working in banking. Five, he waives indictment in November 2005 and immediately pleads guilty to a one-count information. Six, he cooperates with probation office with respect to the loss amount as well as his conduct. And in this regard, the PSI, paragraph three, the probation office writes, he has been cooperative with the pretrial service office in all respects and is in compliance with the imposed conditions of his release. Paragraph 26, Mr. Gordon has accepted responsibility for his offense. And seven, prior to sentencing, he turns over his retirement accounts to Anchor Bank, the victim in this case, $53,000, and reaches an agreement with Anchor Bank and writes that off so Anchor Bank can get it because it's a 401k and it can't be ordered without an individual signature. As I mentioned here, the loss amount in this case had changed four times since the very beginning. Mr. Gordon had cooperated with pretrial services in order to change that loss amount and inform pretrial services regarding that loss amount. But in the final analysis, when we continue to find errors of it, Mr. Gordon exercised his right under 18 U.S.C. 3664E to make the government prove that loss amount by preponderance of the evidence. The result of that was that Chief Judge Crabb denied Mr. Gordon's right to acceptance of responsibility, denied those 3 points, and held that he was nitpicking, per word. Now, Mr. Gordon at that hearing, and I'm quoting him, testified, I take full responsibility for what I've done, and I'm just concerned that the changing amounts, that I'm responsible for the correct amount, and I also want to make sure that I'm sentenced appropriately according to the correct amount. There's been so much change. Now, with respect to this nitpicking allegation, there's three responses. I mean, number one, it changed four times. That's hardly nitpicking when you're saying, let's put the government to their burden when the loss amount has changed four times. Second, if you read that transcript, you can see what Judge Crabb essentially did was the exact same result in Bezerra, where she looked into the subjective view of what Mr. Gordon was doing, read that in, and said that he was not being contrite enough. Third, again, 18 U.S.C. 3664E says we can put the government to their burden with respect to this burden of proof. Now, in response to this, the government at page 21 of their brief argues that Eshman is not applicable here, and they give a one-line distinguishing phrase here, quote, here Gordon, unlike Eshman, had no tenable justification to challenge his guideline calculations. Again, this loss amount changed four times, and it only changed the last time because Mr. Gordon cooperated with pretrial services in order to show them their double counting. We had even established additional errors that were never even incorporated into that final loss amount. I ask your honors, if a civil plaintiff presented four different damages amounts during civil discovery, would a civil defendant be advancing a frivolous argument to require that civil plaintiff to present that loss amount to a jury? The bottom line is that Mr. Gordon had seven objective deeds. Deeds, again, speak louder than the words, as held by this court, that you can look at in order to evaluate whether or not he accepted responsibility. The only bad deed, and I put bad in quotes, is that he put the government to their proof with respect to a statute and his constitutional right, frankly, to put the government to their proof with respect to the loss amount. I'd like to just briefly address the Booker argument. We brought up a couple Seventh Circuit cases with respect to the Booker issue, which we believe correctly held that under Booker that the Sixth Amendment is violated when a judge makes sentencing findings. Now,
well, I mean, both United States versus George and United States versus Seals should pretty much makes short shrift of that.
And that is exactly you're right, Judge Ripple, and that is exactly what I was going to say. From our view, if you read the question that the Supreme Court granted cert for and answered that question in the affirmative, it can't be read squarely with that remedial distinction. And I'm not going to quarrel with any of you with respect to those subsequent Seventh Circuit cases. Simply just wanted to preserve that issue for appeal. I'll keep the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Elke.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Stephen Elke. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Western District. I was counsel below, and I'm counsel on appeal, of course. With respect to the guideline range, I apologize, Your Honor. I didn't bring my guideline book itself, so I don't know the exact range, but I can tell you this, that the range that Mr. Gordon fell into increased his base level offense of 6 by 10 points because he was between 120 and 200,000. I can't recall off the top of my head if that next lower range is 8 or 6, but I can tell you that as the PSR was originally written, when acceptance was anticipated, with 3 levels lower, the range would have been 18 to 24, and I think we're all familiar enough to know the guidelines, how they work, that it would have been close to the 18 to 24 month period. I apologize. That's the best I can do in terms of answering the question here, Your Honor. In terms of acceptance of responsibility, Judge Crabb correctly, I believe, determined that acceptance wasn't appropriate. But I must say at the outset that the question is on appeal whether clear error was committed. And so if reasonable minds could differ on that, Judge Crabb's decision should be affirmed. She clearly had troubles with what Mr. Gordon had to say on the stand. Of course, she was in the best position to judge his demeanor. The record 14, page 64, the court says, quote, I heard him on the stand, and that's what worries me. I heard somebody who doesn't want to pay out a penny. He really doesn't want to. And now, in And so Judge Crabb had the opportunity to hear both Gail Groloff from the bank and the voluminous documentation that was submitted by the bank. In fact, at page 66, Judge Crabb says, this accounting has gone far beyond anything that I've ever seen before. And she found it to be a reasonable estimate of the loss. In terms of the four different amounts, what was happening was Anchor Bank was finding more money as the investigation into the nature of the fraud went on. So they start out with a number X, and then they have number Y, and then number Z, and the numbers are going up over time. On one occasion, Mr. Gordon, after his plea but before sentencing, through his lawyers, brought to my attention the fact that he thought that Anchor Bank had double counted on one occasion in the amount.
And they had.
In approximately $20,000. I went to the bank with that information. They looked at it again, and this is explained, or Judge Crabb comments on it, I believe, in the sentencing transcript, that it was only after Mr. Gordon had said, wait, you double counted in a certain way, that Anchor Bank was able to see that there was double counting. It wasn't immediately obvious. They went back and double-checked it, and they agreed that they had, and that amount was reduced from the $188,000 that it had been at to the number which was finally arrived at approximately $168,000. So the four different amounts, there was no mystery there in terms of why there are different amounts. The amount keeps going up. Also, in this case, it's important to look at the fact that there was an original sentencing scheduled, and there were some introductory comments, and Judge Crabb asked what the problem here was. Didn't use those words, but basically, what is the objection here? And Mr. Gordon said, well, I have some concerns about the amount, and I believe there's about $5,000 or $6,000 worth of error here. And I had Ms. Groloff sitting right next to me at the sentencing hearing, and I turned to her as representative of the victim, and I asked her if the bank would be willing to essentially write off the $6,000 in restitution, recognizing that it made no difference whatsoever in the sentencing guideline calculation because you have that $120,000 to $200,000 swing. And she had no objection, so we told the court, and this is also in the first sentencing transcript, and we told the court that the bank would waive that. Mr. Gordon and his counsel go outside. They come back. No, that's not acceptable, and so then the judge sets it for sentencing a week later, and that's where Ms. Grollo testified and Mr. Gordon testified, and he never really did have any substantive objection. He found something like $4,000 worth of mathematical errors. And then at the end, when argument was made, Mr. Gordon's counsel, when asked what the appropriate number was for purposes of restitution and sentencing, said that it should be $117,000. Well, the information itself said in excess of $117,000. And the argument for $117,000 put to the district court was made after all this testimony had been received regarding a much higher number. So there really was no basis for saying that it should have been 117. It was almost backing out of the plea, if you will.
Do we know that he would have, you know, pled guilty to this, to these other numbers?
I don't know what Mr. Gordon would have done. I can tell you that, and I don't think this has a docket number, but it is in the court file because I wrote a letter to Judge Crabb in anticipation of sentencing, where I do lay out that originally the information proposed, and there's no doubt that Mr. Gordon came in and said he was going to plead, and I never thought he was going to trial. There's no doubt about that. But the original information I had proposed had the words approximately $117,000 in them. I had a conversation with counsel, and like I said, this is in a letter. I don't know that it's docketed necessarily, but it is in the court file, where I said that I couldn't use the approximately $117,000 language in an information because the bank was telling me the number was higher. And that's where the in excess of $117,000 came in. We all agreed it was $117,000. What the number was, we were going to agree to disagree, I guess, if you will. So there's never any misunderstanding that it was a higher number. So I don't know what Mr. Gordon thought. I presume, though, given that I had this specific conversation and given that the information says in excess, that he indeed would have pled. My point about the $117,000 was, though, that in arguing that, after all this has gone forward, he's really not accepting what he did, and Judge Crabb comments on there. Finally, even if this court were the district court, if it had been the district court, would have reached a different view of it and given him acceptance, that's not the question. The question is, on a clear error standard, did Judge Crabb have a reason for doing so, and she did. I'm not even going to address the Booker situation here. I think it was adequately set forth in our briefs. Unless there are any further questions, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You have 2 minutes left, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. To this question of whether or not Mr. Gordon had a substantive objection to the loss amount, he didn't have to. It is the government's burden to come forward with a preponderance of the evidence and show the correct loss amount. He could have simply stood silent and had that proven. The very fact that he exercised the statutory and constitutional right does not mean he didn't accept responsibility. In fact, to say that he didn't accept responsibility for exercising that right is a violation of Ashman. And that's exactly what we're saying. Now, the idea that he didn't want to pay a penny, he did. He paid $53,000 prior to sentencing, and he took out this line of credit, and he testified uncontradicted that he had this money ready to pay until the loss amount started changing. He could identify, to your question, Judge Ripple, with respect to the $117,000, he recognized those accounts. But as they kept going different and the double counting, it became more and more unclear to him as to what exactly he was being held responsible for and what he wasn't. He even offered to sit down with Anchor Bank, and that was refused. The bottom line is he has done nothing but accept responsibility other than exercise his right. And Mr. Elke is a very fair person, and he has been very fair throughout this, and he did not mischaracterize anything that I said. But in this plea negotiation, he was very fair to me insofar as saying that you should be careful not to challenge the loss amount in this district because it's generally held to be no acceptance of responsibility. I couldn't believe it. And I'd be happy to waive the rest of my time so you can ask him that question. Because in the Western District of Wisconsin, apparently, if you challenge a loss amount, you're not going to get acceptance. And that's not right. That's unfair. And that's exactly what Eshman prevents. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. My thanks to both counsel. And the.
Respond?
Do you want to respond to that, sir?
I don't think that's quite right as to what I said. What I said was I cautioned counsel because, knowing that he's from the District of Minnesota, that the Western District of Wisconsin is more stringent in looking at it than some other districts, and that unless there is a real good faith basis, once the PSR has been done and all the documents have been submitted, that unless there is, you know, a substantive objection that you can point to, you have to be more careful in our district than in some other district because the courts actually, in our view, hew to what the guidelines actually require. And so I did say that, and that's where I left it.
Thank you, counsel. Our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We have finished the cases scheduled for the morning, and therefore the court will rise until 9:30 tomorrow morning.